Welcome to a series of netcasts brought to you by Yale University. This is Dr. Richard Selzer talking about a play based on his story, Diary of an Infidel, on the eve of its first performance at Yale.
Richard Selzer is having a great second act. The surgeon and clinical professor gave up the practice of medicine more than 20 years ago to devote himself to a highly successful career as a writer. This is Colleen Shaddix for the Yale Office of Public Affairs talking with Dr. Selzer about plans to once again take that act on stage. Now, your story, Diary of an Infidel, has been adapted for a stage and it's about to get premiered here at Yale. You've had plays produced before. I take it this one's a little different. Can you tell me about that?
Well, this is, I hate to call it a play yet, because it is still, as we say in medicine, in utero. It hasn't quite been born, but it was a short story of mine called Diary of an Infidel, which deals with my stay in a monastery in Venice for several weeks, I wrote a journal of that called Diary of an Infidel, and that is what was transformed into a piece for the stage, and that is what is going to be presented later this month.
And I get the impression it's somewhat low tech by design, so that
yes.
It will be very replicatable.
That's right. It is not a play in the sense that the lines have been memorized by the actors. They will read from the text, but they will be costumed, and there will be movement on this set and, I think, music. But I have had very little to do with the actual planning of the performance. I'm just the used-up old sawbones, the author.
So now, as an author, you labor incredibly over your words. What is it like to have an actor just pick them up and speak them?
Well, it's quite startling to me. And I listen to the words as they come out of the mouth of another person, and I think, could that possibly be happening? Because what happens to me is that I become every character that I write about. It's like the French novelist Gustave Flaubert, the great novelist who wrote Madame Bovary. And he was asked about the autobiographical flavor of his work, and he said, "I am Madame Bovary." And I found that to be my case, too, because I become every patient and doctor and nurse that I write about. And so listening to my words come out of the mouth of an actor or a stranger is quite startling.
That's really interesting. As you were saying that, I was thinking of Chekhov, another physician author. And I'm always struck by his empathy, by his great compassion. He really doesn't write any villains.
No, well, he's my great hero. And he is the inspiration for my work. When I started, I was 58 years old when I retired from surgery. I had been a surgeon for some 35 years. And when it suddenly occurred to me that I didn't want to take out any more gallbladders. I wanted to give to medicine the literature that it so richly deserved, but did not have since the death of Anton Chekhov. And so I decided that I would try to do what he did in a way. I do not pretend to be of the quality or character of Chekhov, but I've done the best I could to give to medicine the literature.
Now, was this a totally dramatic departure? Were you writing short stories in college? And
No, I wasn't writing short stories in college. But at the end of my surgical internship, it was 1953, it was an intern here at Yale, I was drafted into the United States Army, and I was assigned to South Korea. The war was still in process, although it was winding down. And so I was stationed in a rural area of South Korea up near the demilitarized zone, what became the demilitarized zone. And I found myself taking care of the Korean villagers in that province of Korea. And so I had to learn the language, first of all, to speak to them. I had no interpreter and no nurse. I was by myself.
Wow.
And I decided then and there to keep a journal of that experience that lasted a year and a half. And it became a journal. And it was the first thing I ever wrote. And that was over half a century ago. And it is the last thing that I have published. I set it aside for half a century and even misplaced it from my memory in a way. But the University of Texas asked for my papers, and so my wife and I gathered them together from the attic in the cellar, and we didn't look at them, but we put them in cartons and mailed it down to the University of Texas. And shortly thereafter, I received a phone call from a man who said, "I've just read your novel."
And you said, "What novel?"
I said, "There must be some mistake. I've never written a novel." He said, "Well, I have it right here in my hand." And I said, "What's the name of it?" And he said, "Well, it's The Bronze Gong." And that rang a bell or a gong.
A gong.
Because in the rural area where I had been stationed in Korea, on a cliff above this valley, there was a monastery, Buddhist monastery, and they had a gong at which they rang periodically during the day and night, and it was a bronze gong. And so when I wrote this journal, I called it The Bronze Gong. And when it came time to publish it earlier this year, I qualified it by calling it a novel because it contained certain things that I didn't want to be known as factual by people who might be hurt by them. And so it's called, I called it The Bronze Gong, and then it was changed, the title was changed to Knife Song Korea, a novel by Richard Seltzer. And that's what was published in July.
So monasteries loom large in your work.
Well, they do, really. I'm sort of a monk myself. I have a monk deep down inside me, I think. I always have. But I'm not Catholic, and I'm not even religious, but I have the feeling of the monastery in me.
Can I ask you to read a short passage from Infidel?
I'd be glad to. I had come, I suppose, seeking someone who possessed the key to something which all my life had been a mystery to me. Someone human, yet who had risen above his humanity. I did not find him here. Now I go back to my life. I shall practice no rites, say no prayers. Instead, I shall permit myself superstition. I shall continue to make sacrifices to urban and forest deities, believing as I do that symbolic gestures enhance the sense of oneness with all of nature. I shall go on doctoring, lest I be tempted to lie down and cherish my sorrows. I shall watch the birds. I shall content myself with a few nuggets of laughter and memory. And I shall try to find human beings to hold in my arms. I'm skeptical of great notions such as mankind or God. It is nature that I love, and man."
Is that a fair statement of your beliefs?
Yes, it is. I have always tried to do the best I can and to do no harm, as a doctor swears not to do. And I just don't want to hurt anybody, either physically or mentally. Mm-hmm. And that's difficult for a surgeon.
Because you do hurt people.
You do hurt people. You take up a scalpel and cut open the body and inflict pain on people. But there is compassion mm-hmm. behind it.
Now, I know that one of the real-life inspirations for one of the characters in this story, one of the monks, said that you did have a spiritual experience there. Do you disagree with him?
Well, I loved those monks, and I loved my time in the monastery. And Don Bernardo was the guest master mm-hmm. at the time that I was in the monastery. He it was who opened the door when I knocked on it and said, "I am a wayfarer seeking shelter." And he said, "I will show you to your cell." Mm. And that was the way I was introduced to this monastery. Mm-hmm. And I became the doctor, the resident doctor, for the time I was there. I gave myself to the monks as a physician, and even did some surgery on the abbot of mm-hmm. the monastery. And but he, Don Bernardo, was a lovely person, and he made me feel at home there. And as I understand it, he may be coming to the performance of this little playlet. I'm not sure.
That's wonderful. Yeah, you've got quite a cast lined up, right? Bruce Altman?
Yes.
The well-known actor, and some local physicians.
And Tom Duffy, who is the chairman of the Department of the Humanities at the medical school, and some other doctors.
It'll be quite an interesting mix.
I think so. I'm glad I don't have to perform in it.
Now, it's interesting. You know, your work is so associated with the medical career that inspired it. And people often talk about you as a medical writer, a physician slash author. But you're writing about, you know, suffering, loss, fear, the human condition. Do you think of yourself as a medical writer or simply a writer?
Well, simply a writer. In the beginning, I made use of the lifetime of experience as a doctor for my subject. But as the years went by, it became apparent to me that I was more of a writer, an ordinary writer, not mm-hmm. a doctor writer. Mm-hmm. But still, I'm taken up by the medical profession. Even this morning in my mail, there was a request by a senior at Yale who is going to go to medical school who asked to interview me mm-hmm. for her senior thesis. Mm-hmm. And she has read all my work. And many medical students and doctors have read my work and have found it inspiring, at least that's what they write and tell me. Mm-hmm. And it is gratifying to me to feel that I have been useful even after I retired from the profession of medicine.
Does that speak to some need that's not being met for healthcare providers to express everything that they experience, have some kind of catharsis to deal with inflicting pain, to deal with loss?
Yes. Well, I don't know if I could be a doctor in our time now. Mm-hmm. It's become so mechanized, and so there's so much technology, and there is a vast distance between the doctor and the patient. Mm-hmm. And I think that the doctor must make a great effort now to draw close, to touch his patient and be touched by them, and to listen carefully. That is the empathy and compassion that I try to instill in doctors who write to me, mm-hmm. Asking how they can regain the affection for their profession mm-hmm. that they have lost. And so I hope that they can gather some of that from my work.
Thank you. That was Richard Selzer, author of Diary of an Infidel, which will be on stage at the Yale Art Gallery April 24th and 25th. For more information, call 917-696-9361.